you tell me a little bit about the Narver House? You did that for the city manager?
No, that's McIntyre.
Oh, McIntyre, I'm sorry.
Don McIntyre. Well, we did the Narver House, which is very close to the McIntyre House. But Grace Narver had seen my house, Domus Solaris.
Uh-huh.
Some friend of hers had taken her up there, and somehow I had met her. But she liked it a lot, and they bought a lot off of Orange Grove on Markham Place. And so she called me in and wanted a house just like that, except with two-car garage. It was a level site where Domus Solaris is on the hillside. And so we had a variation on the theme, as it were. So we did the house, but it had a kind of an entry garden and a deck and a bridge going into the main entrance. But it had all the characters of Domus Solaris, but with a his and her garage. And then they had two daughters, and we had a guest suite on back. And they were just terrific clients, and really, and that was actually, it was the site where they used to keep all the horses for the Rose Parade.
Oh.
And but we did the home for them, and they were just terrific to work with, and they loved it. And then we did the house for Don McIntyre on Lock Haven, just around the corner from the Terman Roses houses.
Right.
And for Don McIntyre and his wife, and they also had a children were grown, but they didn't want them living in a house with them per se, but we had a guest suite on back. In fact, two guest suites, so any of the kids could come and stay on weekends or whenever they wanted to. And that was really a great little house with a two-story kind of dining space and snuggery living room and everything on the kitchen, dining on the lower floor, and then the master bedroom and his kind of office away from office on the second floor. And they're both very, very good houses.
And the McIntyre house, when was that done?
Well, the Narver house was 75.
Uh-huh.
And McIntyre is just a year or two after that.
Okay. It's thinking about the places that you've lived in Pasadena. You've designed houses for yourself, but they were long, long ago. Did you ever have a dream of building a house for yourself in Pasadena, or was that just not something you thought about?
Well, you always think about building a house for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting the ideal site and having the right amount of money and doing the ultimate thing. And I really kind of did that. Domus Solaris and Domus Dos are all both very exciting structures and lots of fun, and but I wanted to stay in Pasadena, and there just weren't any sites that I could find for the right amount of money that I could afford at the time, and to build the ultimate thing. I guess I maybe took it out vicariously on the Mosley House.
Oh yeah,
such a classic site, and the view to City Hall and into Pasadena, the right orientation, looking east instead of west, where you have the west, you know, afternoon sun. And it was, and Mosley was so close to where I live, and working with Alex Mosley, who really enjoyed building a house and wanted to build one all his life, and knew our architecture, and just a great client to work with. So it was almost like building my own home.
Okay, so that might be close to
I think any architect always thinks about building his own ideal home. And the circumstances arose where I could find the ideal site and the right amount of money, I'd love to do a house for myself, sure.
Huh.
Right now, in a split second.
What would the site look like for you?
Oh, it wouldn't make any difference. This is something I could build on,
mm-hmm.
whether it be hillside or level pad or whatever. Just that, I'd be a very exciting project, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, one more general question about your architecture. One major concept in all of California architecture has been the idea of indoor-outdoor living, started with the Craftsman era, the Mission era, you know? And how has that idea informed your architecture over the years, if at all, this idea of indoor-outdoor living?
Oh, I think it's, especially living in Southern California, it's just kind of a given.
Really?
I mean, to design a home and just kind of contain your living spaces in four walls with little holes in them.
Yeah.
It's kind of a sacrilege in a way. I mean, it is so automatic with us to design the outside as well as we design the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So spaces literally flow out.
Oh.
As you can see it here in Hernandez, when you come through the front door, that spline just leads you right outside.
Yes.
You go out there, depending on all the people out there, you just automatically go out, lead you out there to the moon watching platform, or you go off to the right or to the left, depending on what sort of activity you're going to do.
Right.
And then when you're in those spaces, you feel as much like you're outside as you're inside,
mm-hmm.
except for that glass barrier, which is a transparent barrier.
Right.
And you open doors, you're really outside as well as inside, it's just more protected. So it's like I say, just kind of a given, automatic.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your quote-unquote retirement, because you're only sort of retired, and the future, and looking back also. I was looking at a Wall Street Journal article from a few years ago, and it said that you occasionally drive past your houses to check up on them. In fact, you said they're like your children. You want to see how they're doing.
That's right. My God, where did you find that?
It was just on the internet, Wall Street Journal.
Huh.
So you really feel that your houses are like your children.
Yeah, well, that particular one, that was Domus Alaris.
Oh, okay.
It's funny, the experience I had there. I sold it to a young couple, and I think I went through them, because there was no place to hide, they finally sold it to, I think, an attorney who had some kind of financial problems, and that set there, I think he did some damage to the house, it set there for a long time. So I kept driving by, seeing what was going to happen. A lot of people called me because they wanted to know if I would help them restore it and all. I said, of course, but then they kind of, I guess there's many problems with it. But the bank, they'd done some erosion problems. Anyway, one day driving by, I saw a lady walking up the driveway with a little child. So I stopped, and she happened to be a Japanese lady, and I said, I'm Don Hensman, I designed this home, I used to live here. Oh, well, we bought it, and my husband's an architect, and wanted to come in, so I went in, and met him, but he was kind of busy that day, and then we talked a little, but then I went back like a week or two later, and he had painted all the redwood on the front, the beautiful redwood, which I had hand-picked, painted all white.
Oh.
And then he had cut out the dining table that Conrad had built for me, designed and built. And I said, what? Why did you paint all the redwood? And he very indignantly said, well, it's my house. I can do what I want with it. Just ruined it. I mean, this was built like a piece of furniture. And and he taken up the carpeting and some other things to it. And I left. And I think a month or two later, he called me. He wanted to know if I could send him some plans. And I said, well, it's your house. Do you do the plans or something like that? It was probably the only time I've really been upset with what someone has done.
Really?
And he virtually had ruined the house.
Oh.
And he's probably very happy with it.
Sure.
But it's little things like that, because it was a classic. And then, strange enough, Domus, I had sold that, and when I went back to get my mail a week later, they had ripped out a lot of the carpeting in the main hallway, which went up the ceiling, went up the wall, and was all an integral part to make it very dark in there, make a tunnel out of it. And then they started putting marble down and over the brick in the living room and pushed out the kitchen. They were destroying that.
Oh.
So anyway, you learn to be philosophical about it, and it's true. They own the house and they do what they want, and I had my good times in it. So nothing you can do. But that's funny you read that article there, because that's true. Houses are very important.
Uh-huh.
But something happens to one of your kids, you know, you feel sorry about it and all that, but what can you do?
What can you do?
So that...
Are there any other owners who've done strange things to your houses?
Oh, yeah, like the little Thompson house, which we did many, many years ago with Cal Straub. That was a great little house. You have photos of it there.
Yes.
And some people had just bought it. I mean, third or fourth or fifth people. And I went over today. We had some questions. I helped them out, which I'm happy to do. went over, and here's someone had added on a dining room onto it, like a big cancer on the side of it. And not discreetly at all, instead of calling us to help them out, they just plastered on a new mass to it. And it's not ruined, it's perfectly livable, but it could have been so much nicer. And that was a very important early house, post and beam house we did. Mm. And then there's things like the Case Study House 28, the beautiful brick house that you've seen. I went out, I hadn't been able to see that when we first did it. It was part of the big subdivision of very high quality homes. And they had a guard gate on it after a while, after a few years. So I had to go by there and I couldn't get in to see it. But about a year ago, maybe 6 months ago, I decided that I was going to wait until someone else went in, one of the residents, and I'd follow them in so I could see what's happening. Because I was doing kind of a book on it and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. And
so I drove up. I think it was with a friend. I'd been up to the job, the Daly house we'd done in Camarillo. So way back, it made up my mind I was going to get in. So I went in front, and lo and behold, if they hadn't added a three-car garage in the front of that house. They left the carport there as it was, but they'd added a stuccoed garage in the front, which could be removed if someone wanted to restore it. And they're perfectly happy with it, but the people were, when I rang the doorbell, and they were very happy to see us, and they loved the house, and very grateful, and they went on and on and on, but the living room was a mess, and it kind of hurt a little to see, remember this as a little jewel, and now it's a kind of a wreck, except the people are very, very happy there, but they don't know what it used to be like. Mm-hmm. It's like, I guess, a very beautiful lady that all of a sudden has kind of gone to hell and got an old ragged coat on or something like that. You want to buy a new fur or a new coat, jewelry or whatever. But anyway, rise above it.
Yeah, wow. Do you think that people who live in a well-designed house, like a house that they have commissioned, have an obligation to keep it the same?
Oh, no.
No.
Well, they normally usually will keep it the same because they designed it. That's kind of their baby.
Yeah.
So they'll respect it. Very seldom they make any changes without contacting us or that really doesn't happen. The minute it changes hands,
right,
then it basically goes to one of two things. It goes to someone who really appreciates and bought it for what it is, and they maintain it. And it's they may change. Well, at Domus Solaris, they kept everything as it was, except they changed all the chrome to brass, which is okay.
Okay.
I mean, but like Carol King would never destroy any of the original Buff and Hinsman look, you know.
Right. Just,
and neither would Alex Mosley. But as soon as you sell it, then they either respect it for what it is, or they immediately put their own marking on it. So it's their house. And I can think of so many, either Domus Solaris and Domus Dos. I think of the Saltman House in Pasadena off Avenue 64, which was a very, very good house. It had a big, very wide brick spline from the entrance going all the way through the entrance dining area to the exterior swimming pool. And a couple had bought it after the Saltmans had sold it a few years later, and they called me to come by for some consultation. And the front door opened, and there was a big white slab of white marble, about 4x4 sitting there, 4x6, with slippers on it, so you took your shoes off, you went in. And inside on this beautiful brick floor was purple carpeting.
Purple? Oh my gosh.
With the ugliest dining table I've ever seen. And you know, your heart just falls because it's ruined.
Yeah.
It's ruined. Huh. And a big swag chain with an ugly chandelier on top of the dining. That's what you see instead of the gorgeous space you used to see before. And almost everyone has a tendency to make a change of some sort. And you have no control over it unless they really respect it for what it is and call you and say, we need help. Then I'm willing to do it.
Have you had any of your houses torn down by new owners?
I can't think of one.
Because I know that recently, I think there was a Neutra that was torn down.
Oh yeah, it was a big guy. I was at I was at a seminar of some sort right after that. In fact, it was at down at Moca when we had the book signing for the Case Study House.
Uh-huh.
And there, that was just a couple days after that happened. And there was a big thing in the paper about that. And people were really given the impression they were going to restore it.
That's what it sounded like.
Torn down. And ironically, one of the Neutra's houses, the Kaufman House, which was a classic house, was in very bad shape, and two young architects, Marmol and Radzigner, restored that in mint condition. In fact, that's in the June issue. They did the Kaufman House, but they did one of our houses, the Helen Rose House, which we did in 1960.
Uh-huh.
They restored that, and that's in the June issue of Architectural Digest.
Uh-huh.
They did a beautiful job of restoration. Maybe I told you I went by there about 10 years ago, and it looked weathered like mad. And Mrs. Cattleman, who bought it, restored it. It looks terrific now.
Oh, that's great.
On the other hand, we did a house for Walter Vandekamp, that Vandekamp fame, many years ago, about 60, something like that, 1560. And we had a lot of Mexican adobe brick, which it got, and they wanted a kind of a Spanish flavor to it, even most contemporary, the beams. And every time I go by it, after the Vandekamp died and sold it, every time I go by it, someone had done something more sacrilegious about it.
Oh, gosh.
Stuck it over the Mexican brick, moving the front doors out, stuck it with the beams. Anyway.
Oh.
Enough said.
Okay. Do you check up on your houses a lot? Do you drive by and make sure they're okay?
Well, a lot of them you can't see anymore.
Oh, okay.
We have a tremendous number of houses in Pasadena, and I do have a list of houses. Occasionally people call and want to know houses we've done in Pasadena, and I have a list with a map that shows drive-bys that you can see.
Oh, that's nice.
And so frequently with students or with friends or with someone's interested, I'll either give them that map or I will drive people by some of the houses we see. It's kind of fun for me to go by and see the Narver House and the McIntyre House and the house they did for Randall Mackinson and Hernandez's house from across the canyon. And so I check up on it once in a while.
Mm-hmm. And you keep in touch with a lot of your old clients.
Sure.
Yeah. Do you see that just because you've gotten to know them so well, you sort of become friends with them during the process?
Yeah.
And you just keep up with them?
I think in the early days, when Conrad and I were teaching, and I would handle all the things on the west side, which I think I may have mentioned earlier,
uh-huh.
and he would handle on the side. And as a result, when you're working with a client, we know frequently both of us work with clients, but sometimes one would take over after a certain stage, and so you naturally get more, you get closer to the people on the side that you're working on. That's why I got involved with Lawrence Harvey and the people in Malibu. I was doing all those things out there, but now since Conrad died, I was really involved in all the designs and did all the work with the clients. So you get pretty close, pretty much involved with them, analyzing their living needs and all that, and going through the preliminaries and building the houses as we do. So you get pretty close.
All right. Here's a big question. Looking back over your 50-year career in architecture, more than 50 years, how would you say that your style changed over time? You've talked a little bit about this because of the energy concerns, but just if you were to give a couple sentences about how it's changed.
Well, it's fairly simple. We really started off with really post and beam,
mm-hmm.
where everything was modulated. So when you'd see one of our early houses, you would see the everything on an 8-foot module or a 3-foot 6 module, that sort of thing. And so everything had a lot of rhythm to it.
Right.
And because of we'd seen some interesting buildings in Fresno one time. And then kind of mixed in with this Title 24, we started working with masses. We had to lower ceilings and raise floors.
Right.
So we started doing a more sculptural sort of architecture instead of structural, where you could see how the thing was built. became a series of masses and more of, we could say, sculptural. And it was just a slow evolution from one to the other, and can't pinpoint it. The only way you could, you as a layman or not see it looking at the architecture, maybe some of those photographs that you have, you can see the early, like the Dubnoff, you
yes.
can see the structure.
Yes.
And with this house and Mosley's, you see mostly masses.
I have a question about Pasadena architecturally. Some observers say that modernism is coming back in fashion in Pasadena, that it was sort of out for a while and now.
No.
You don't think it was ever out?
No. It's never really in and never really out. I don't know who says that. I don't know what they're talking about.
Okay.
Well, I was to tell you something that's quite gratifying. I was on a. Didn't I give you a copy of the Pasadena Weekly?
Yes, last week.
And
I read
was
that
on article. That little group with Sue Mossman and
yes.
Bob Winters.
Yes.
Are both, you know, they're Bob has written a lot of books on craftsman architecture
yes.
and very much in love with the Gamble House, but he says, well, the only trouble with that is a lot of the students think that's what you're supposed to do today. Instead of designing a house for today as a contemporary house, they do it like an old craftsman. They don't know what the hell they're doing. And Sue Mossman is very much in that, you know, she's a traditionalist and trying to save things for posterity and preservations and all this. But she likes the fact that contemporary work is being, design is being done here. She doesn't think it has to be like it was 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So it's very gratifying to me because, you know, we've been fighting an uphill battle all this time with contemporary work because most people like traditional. And so slowly they're seeing some of the virtues of contemporary design
huh.
and getting away from the tradition. But it's still a big battle, and we're in a minority, but we're winning.
Why do you think Pasadena is known more for its craftsman style than for its modernism? Because it does have a lot of wonderful modern buildings.
Well, I think because of the Gamble House, that's primarily
mm-hmm.
it, and what's happened to the Blacker House.
Right.
And I'm very close to, you know, I went to school with Randy, he's one of my dear friends, Randy
yeah.
Mackinson, and
yeah.
I'm a friend of the Gamble House and all that. So I think that is a very big beacon in Pasadena, and all the people that come to see it, thousands each year, and the way they're preserving it, and then all the other greeny greenhouses around, and Frank Lloyd Wright's La Miniatura, which
yeah.
is being restored now, and the Craftsman Bungalow, and yeah, I can understand it.
Has craftsman architecture been consistently popular through your time designing in Pasadena?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that it's, you take, when people try to simulate it, don't know what the hell they're doing, and it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
I know, I think the, McCormick and Schmick, for instance, they themed their restaurant in Pasadena after Green and Green. It's pretty good. It's not
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm.
At the new hotel, I think at Radisson, did a very bad, cheap job of trying to imitate Craftsman. I mean, it's just tinny, corny,
mm-hmm.
and this is a cheap, cheap way to do it. But I've had the good fortune of, and Randall being a friend of mine, he was a consultant for the lodge at Torrey Pines down by San Diego.
Oh, sure, I've read about that.
And that's all based on Green and Green. You go in that, you drive in that porte cochere, you think you're in front of the Blacker House, and it's
oh
an incredible
gosh.
Job. And all the rooms feel like the Gamble House. It's a fabulous thing. So when it's done great, it costs a lot more money, and it's hard to find the craftsmen to do it, and the people that can do it well, then it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still doing something that was of the past as opposed to doing something as of today. It's a little Congress when you see microwave ovens and televisions and all these sort of things, and they're trying to make a house 100 years old with all the modern conveniences.
Uh-huh.
A little incongruity there.
Huh. So you appreciate craftsman architecture
oh,
a great deal.
Absolutely.
You just wouldn't design it.
Well, not that I wouldn't design it if I, I'm just not a, just, you know, I don't want to copy what's been done in
right.
the past.
Right.
And we have our own approach to architecture and resolving problems, and we know what we can do, we know what to keep on budget. To do, to repeat, say, the Gamble House today, instead of maybe $175, $200 a foot, that could cost you $400 or $500 a square foot. So
wow.
I would do that sort of craftsmanship and workmanship.
Yeah. How do you foresee Pasadena's architectural future? Do you see more imitation craftsmen, either tinny or well done? Do you see more modernist architecture coming in?
Well, that discussion we had the other day, I think they were very happy that, like, Frank Gehry is coming in and doing a new design school.
Right.
And then the new museum they did over in Walnut, so they made some sort of contribution.
The California Art Museum?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And which is very acceptable, you know, nicely done considering. What people don't realize is the budget involved in the thing.
Huh.
So you have to keep in mind all the time. And like I said, to do a good craftsman, it's going to take a lot of money. And the cost of that sort of thing. We know that we built most of the things we designed, we know what it costs. So we can control that. And also the Title 24 regulations, in terms of insulation and all that, you can't do that with a gamble house unless you start, you know, it's a whole different ball game. But in terms of Pasadena, the rub right now is, in residentially speaking, there just aren't any lots left. I mean, there's a couple of subdivisions recently, and I think it's just about the end of the land and then to be able to subdivide and to design a new home, build a new home in Pasadena. It's a matter of tearing something down and building a new one.
Mm-hmm.
I know 15 years ago, Conrad was looking for land around here, and there just
right.
wasn't anything available. So it's not that it's just going to stay status quo, but I think pretty much going to stay in the norm in terms of a certain percentage of contemporary and a certain amount of traditional and what's been done in the past. And there's always the builders that go in and do the things as inexpensively as they can to get as much out of it as they can. That's the biggest problem.
Right. Let's